We are joined by an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today. You know he's a good friend of this program. He is Jason Lockenfora. Jason, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, my friend?
How you doing, JLC?
I can't complain, buddy.
Good.
Can't complain.
All right, so let me ask you about Lamar Jackson, because you and I have talked about him and what he would mean to the Ravens ever since he was drafted last year. So just how big was that win for them yesterday over San Francisco in those elements?
Yeah, I think it was big. You know, they had been on this magic carpet ride, blowing people out by, 30 points a week and basically having games decided at the half and the starters off the field in the third quarter, almost like the preseason. And that's not, that's not the NFL. It's not going to be like a college or high school game, one-way traffic all the time. And they were destroying some really good teams. But, again, that's not usually how it works on a weekly basis up here. So to get sort of an old-school brawl, one where they weren't going to be playing with the lead the whole day, one where they weren't going to go away and hide, and to have an opponent who pushed them the way they did and, has such a dominant defensive line and so is equipped in a lot of ways to do some things against the Ravens defensively that not all teams can. And then also, to have a really smart offensive play caller, string puller in Kyle Shanahan, who will keep tugging at certain weaknesses, who obviously had the outside zone run game going to a point where the Ravens really couldn't stop it, yet Baltimore still found a way to win ugly. They managed the game. They were smart about the situations when they did have the ball in the second half, even though San Francisco dominated time of possession. And they played to set up their kicker, who's as good as any who's ever done it. So, yeah, I think it was a statement, a different sort of statement by the Ravens. And you know what? It was a great statement by the 49ers as well. And if those two teams were to meet again in February, I think that would be a heck of a ball game.
Jason Lockenfora, my guest. In fact, you've made my point that I was about to make. I think that even in defeat, San Francisco made a real statement themselves. So the 49ers, Jason, get to chase that game in Baltimore with one in New Orleans on Sunday. What are your early thoughts on that matchup?
I still have this feeling, just sort of this sense that I think New Orleans is the best team in football. I thought that last year, too, and obviously we'll never quite know how that Super Bowl would have played out because of the call that changed it all. But they're obviously a very good team. Offensively, they haven't hit on all cylinders like I thought. You still don't see them really pushing the ball downfield with explosive plays, and I think that's an element that tends to become so critical in the playoffs. It's that one big play here or there. That's going to be a heck of a football game. Two really physical football teams. Two defensive lines that can get after it. Two head coaches who are smart about offensive scheming and tactics and putting people in positions to succeed as anybody in the game. And look, Baltimore going to Buffalo, that's not going to be all, roses and cupcakes for them either. I think both these teams are going to feel some physical aftermath from that battle that they threw down in the rain for 3 hours yesterday. And I wonder if it does take a little something out of them short term.
Jason Lockenfora joining us, JLC. So last night, the Texans looked really impressive in handling New England. But let me jump ahead of the Patriots, because you reported yesterday that players and coaches in the Patriots locker room would be open to a reunion with Antonio Brown. When you see how that Patriot offense looked last night, and in particular, how much trouble the receivers are having getting open and getting separation, how likely then is a reunion?
Well, it all comes down to Robert Kraft, who hasn't been really open to it yet. But, look, could Tom Brady or somebody try one last, chance and politic a little bit, say something to him? Could a Bill Belichick try to move the needle? It's clear they cannot stretch the football field, right? It's clear their limitations offensively. They understand it better than anybody. And we're past the trade deadline. And there's only so much you can do now to get better. And, this might be a year where N'Keal Harry just never really gets his feet wet with all the time that he missed it, and you can't really count on him. Philip Dorsett's a straight-line guy, but he's never really looked the part of a starting NFL wide receiver. Josh Gordon isn't there anymore. I mean, there's not a lot of options. It's clear that 12 trust two guys. He trusts the running back, James White, and he trusts Julian Edelman. It's kind of an adventure throwing to anybody else. And I know this, that the chemistry that he and AB had in a very short period of time in practice and in games was very real, and it was palpable to everybody in that building.
We're talking to Jason Lockin for a few more moments. GLC, let's jump ahead to the NFC East. Now, when you consider how the Cowboys looked on Thanksgiving, then how Philadelphia looked yesterday in losing to Miami, Jason, how bad is the NFC East right now?
Bad. The third, I almost feel like with the number that the AFC East has done on it, like the third place finisher in the AFC East should have to play the champion of the NFC East in a one-game elimination for true control of that division. It's bad. I mean, when you have Washington and New York, who, let's face it, for most of the year have been utterly non-competitive in your division, you're basically getting what should be a four-win subsidy right then and there. And then the other quote-unquote best team in your division, and I'm putting that in air quotes, is a team like Philadelphia or Dallas who've shown any given week they could go out and lose to the Jets or lose to the Dolphins and look pretty pathetic doing it. It's hard to get excited about any of those teams, you know? It's hard to project any of them and say, oh, yeah, that's a team that could roll off three wins in January. You know, and the wild cards of the NFC look pretty – like, let's just say it stays like it is, and it's Seattle and Minnesota, or let's say it's San Francisco and Green Bay. Like, whatever, you know, that's going to be a tough task for Dallas or Philadelphia, or the third-place team in the AFC East, who I think really should win that division.
All right, so if you had to say right now, what are the odds that Jason Garrett is coaching the Cowboys next season, and if he's not, who might they be looking at as a possible replacement?
Well, unless they – magically morph into what Jerry thinks they've been since training camp, which is one of the 3 to 5 best teams in the league with a legitimate chance to win a Super Bowl. You know, unless that is the path they go down, then I think they absolutely will be making a coaching change. And I think that die's been cast since last offseason. And I don't think it, I know it. I think Lincoln Riley would be the first name that they reach out to, or one of the first names they reach out to, somebody who they'd like to try to secure an audience with as soon as possible. And I do think he would listen. It's hard not to when you got Jerry Jones. You can be pretty persuasive. And you got that, you know, you got that star, and you've got that symbol, and you know, a team that's on prime time. And we know America's team, all that stuff. I think that's a guy who would be very attractive to them.
Jason, last thought, the Chargers, man, they find new and inventive ways to lose. But this is absolutely incredible how that went down yesterday. You and I talked about this when I was back in New York last, but what is your sense as to the future of Philip Rivers with the Chargers?
I think that, they've already had internal discussions about what are we doing right now? And at some point, do we just try to win a game with Tyrod Taylor, because the highs won't be as high, but the lows won't be as low. And maybe it's a little more sustainable. Maybe it's a little more stable. And then, look, they're at a critical juncture in that franchise in a lot of different ways. And they're not just going to be playing in a soccer stadium off the side of the road anymore. They're moving into this football Taj Mahal. It's going to be the talk of the league. They're sharing it with a team with whom they don't really have a whole lot of natural connections to, and with whom their owners and business side people are not getting along. And I don't know who you market the Chargers around. I mean, Rivers has turned the ball over more than anybody in the league the last 4 years, not named Jameis Winston. He does not look like an ascending asset. He's going to cost 20-odd million, you know, a season, pushing 30 million a season. He's turning 38. He still lives in San Diego. You know, he's not a guy who I think you're going to see out and about in L.A. all the time, or, you know, at this, you know, meeting or that meeting, or you know, pushing the franchise. And they've been looking and evaluating other quarterbacks in the draft with an eye towards taking one high for several years now. They haven't done it yet. But, yes, I do think that somebody else will be their quarterback next year.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today. He is Jason Lockin for a JLC. I will see you Sunday morning. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, buddy. Thank you.
You too. Jason Lockin for a.